It is a great day on the pod. Not just because we're continuing Serial Killer September, but got something new to add to the show. It's our Weird World.
Our Weird World.
Welcome to Our Weird World. I am your host, John Henson. Full disclosure, I had to kind of re-record that cold open because it's been a while since I recorded the last episode, and I thought this was the start of Serial Killer September, but no, this is the second week of it. But fun times are ahead. First of all, let me tell you guys something. I just had a chocolate milkshake. Now, I know what you're thinking, John, that's great. Milkshakes are fine. Nothing really to write home about, but hang on. I've found the secret to what makes a great milkshake. All right, here's the thing. All right, first of all, you need a blender, right? I think we can all agree on that. Second, your ice cream, doesn't matter what kind of ice cream you get. All right, I prefer chocolate, but in terms of the brand, I don't think it really matters. All right, you can get the basic Food Lion brand, or you can work your way all the way up to get the weirdly sexual like Magnum brand. It doesn't matter. All right. It doesn't matter what kind of ice cream you get. All right. But the game changer is the liquid. All right. Now, traditionally, I think anytime we go get a milkshake somewhere, somebody's pulling out the whole milk, 2% if they're weird. All right. If you're making your milkshakes with skim milk, get out of here. That's disgusting. All right. That's just straight cow water and it's gross. All right. We don't want skim milk in our milkshakes. However, here's the thing. All right, take your whole milk, throw it out, or whatever. The game changer for a chocolate milkshake, throw that heavy whipping cream in there. Oh, man. Like, you want to get close to, like, a homemade frosty consistency? Heavy whipping cream, dog. So good. So good. If you're lactose intolerant, you're going to have a bad time, for sure. But man, oh, and like, I don't know, maybe you can try to find the dairy-free ice cream and dairy-free whipping cream, if that's even a thing, I don't know. But man, that's where it's at, all right? Ice cream, heavy whipping cream, which is really just, you're just liquefying the ice cream at this point, I think. But whatever, it's so good. It's so good, all right? Also, another thing, before we jump into today's topic, new bit coming on the show. I'm going to end the show with just an ode to the modern poets out there. All right. I am a writer. I kind of really got back into writing back in high school. I started writing poems / song lyrics. And really, song lyrics are just the poetry of today. And I want to pay homage to some of our most successful poets and kind of showcase the true raw passion and emotion that comes out when you read their lyrics without any sort of musical context behind them. It is a really beautiful thing. So stay tuned for that at the end of the show. I'll wrap everything up. I'll hit the music and I'll come back with just a real poignant recitation of popular song lyrics. It's really going to be enlightening. But before we get there, we're continuing Serial Killer September with this week's topic, Robert the Butcher Baker Hansen. Robert Hansen was born to a pair of Danish immigrants in the town of Estherville, Iowa, on February 15th, 1939. His father was a baker by trade, which isn't exactly the most lucrative career in like a really super small town. But Robert followed in his father's footsteps, and he wanted to be a baker when he grew up. So he started training in his father's bakery. It didn't help that Robert was extremely skinny. He had a really, really severe stutter and just a face full of acne that left his face heavily scarred, which is like the trifecta of being like the least popular kid in school, you know? And man, like we had a kid, he may even listen to this show. We had a kid in high school. He had kind of a stutter, and I probably did my fair share of bullying, which I feel bad about, but other kids just like really wrecked this kid a lot. And then he grew up and joined the Marines. So I don't know, man, if he ever snaps, like, I hope I'm far enough down on his list that if he does kill everyone who bullied him, he gets caught before he gets down to me. He would laugh, I think, I hope, upon hearing that. But like totally like amazing how his life turned around, like, you know, but it's weird. You know, some of those kids in high school, they're just really weird and they get bullied. And some of them, like the guy I went to high school with, you know, really made something of themselves, really became successful. I don't even think he like has a stutter or anything like that anymore. He's just like really cool. But then, and why I have this sort of paranoia is because of stories like Robert Hansen. All right. I mean, burying the lead on this one, this is a serial killer September. And so he's this really dorky kid, super frail and skinny, a ton of acne on his face, and just a really, really bad stutter. And he's also hormonal. He's a teenager. He's trying to get close to some girls in school, but they're always rejecting him. And rather than completely reinventing himself after high school and returning as just like this chiseled, smooth-talking ladies' man, Robert really began having violent fantasies of exacting revenge on all of these girls and all who rejected him, all of these bullies who made fun of him. And so instead of, you know, kind of working on his social skills and trying to be less weird, he chose to be a loner and spent a lot of his free time practicing hunting and archery, which Robert then enlisted in the army in 1957, but he was discharged a year later for some reason. I don't really know. He returned to Iowa and found a job as an assistant drill instructor at the local police academy. And he also met a young lady who wasn't completely repulsed by his acne scars and his stuttering. And so the two got married in 1960. Later that year, Robert finally got revenge on his high school by burning down the entire bus garage and destroying three buses. Sure. He was quickly arrested and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. And while he was there, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Shocking. His wife also filed for divorce and disappeared. Never had much contact with her again. After his release for burning down the bus garage, Robert went in and out of jail for various crimes before moving up to Anchorage, Alaska in 1967 with the intent of turning his life around. So he's got the best intentions. He's getting out of his small town. He's going to go off to not the big city, but just an even more isolated city. Okay. Well, questionable, but he's going to be a great person and he's going to be super loved and everyone's going to love him and he's going to be happy. And it started to work. Like, he became really popular in Anchorage. He endeared himself to the community by setting various hunting records, which, man, if you're going to be popular in Alaska, that's the way to do it. Break some hunting records. He ultimately bought a house and then opened a bakery just like his parents had done when they had arrived in Iowa. But Robert could not completely change who he was as a person, and he continued to go in and out of jail. He began frequenting Anchorage's Tenderloin District, which was this seedy part of town full of strip clubs, which existed thanks to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, because the oil industry had brought a ton of really lonely, horny men up to Anchorage to work. They had plenty of money because they're making that oil money, which then in turn brought a lot of single prostitute sex working women up to Anchorage looking to take that money from them. And for Robert, it all started when he met a woman named Susie Heppard. On November 15th, 1971, Robert followed Susie back to her apartment. And he started by explaining that he was trying to find someone in the apartment complex before then transitioning to asking her out on a date. And he thought that was going to be super smooth. He thought, you know, she would be charmed by it and that she would, you know, kind of go along with it. But when she rejected him, like all of the girls in high school from his past, Robert was immediately filled with rage. And so he stays outside of her apartment the whole rest of the night. And then the next morning, he waited for Susie to come back home from work, I guess, and confronted her with a gun. And he walks up to her and just comes up behind her and he's like, "Shut up, sweetheart, or I'll blow your brains out," because he stuttered. "I'm going to beat that dead horse for sure." Susie screamed, which is what Robert told her not to do. And that caught the attention of another tenant who then called out through an open window to see if she was okay. Robert, at this point, he realized that police are likely on their way and just walked off down the street. Police then found him a short time later and charged him with assault with a deadly weapon. Now, while he was waiting trial and out on bail, Robert then kidnapped 18-year-old prostitute Barbara Fields, and he tied her up in his car, drove out to an empty field, raped her, and then drove back to a hotel room and raped her again. I don't know why he didn't just go straight to the hotel room and rape her twice. These are the questions I have, all right? Not why did he do this to begin with? I think it's pretty obvious. But why did he go out into a field if he was just going to go back to a hotel and do the same thing? I don't know. He then drove her back to Anchorage and threatened that, told her that, like, if she goes to the police, he's going to kill her. And so he then lets her go. And then obviously Barbara goes to the police, who then come and find him and charge him with rape. Unfortunately, because Barbara never showed up to testify, the case got dropped. He was still sentenced to 5 years in prison for assault. But it was for the assault to, Susie Heppert. So, thanks to a very loose psychiatric evaluation, which basically was like, he's fine. He's not going to do anything else. Robert was released a short time later. He didn't even serve the full 5 years. And Robert, who likely couldn't believe his luck at this point, went right back out on the streets and planned his next attack. And at this point, like, I can't even be mad at the guy, like, 'cause he knows who he is. This is who he is. Police and the entire justice system has let everybody down at this point. So if we're going to be mad at anybody, let's be mad at the Alaskan government. After three more suspected attacks that he later refused to confess to, but pretty sure it was him, Robert was then sent to prison for stealing a chainsaw. And although he tried to have another favorable psychiatric evaluation, Robert was given another 5-year sentence. And even though the examining psychiatrist this time noted that Robert was suffering from, quote, a disintegration of personality, which is, that feels pretty heavy. The Alaskan authorities were like, meh, he's fine. And they let him go again. Why? I don't know. Also, my allergies have gotten significantly worse since I started recording, and I don't know why. Robert immediately went out and applied for a pilot's license, but it was rejected because he wrote down that he was on lithium. So rather than count his losses and go do something else, Robert just filled out the application again and just left out the fact that he was on lithium, and he got approved. Like, what is going on in Alaska in the 1970s where, like, just this dude is just like, it's like there's no government. It's just like the government there just exists because they have to have one, and they just don't care about anything. But he gets his license, and this is really great. On his first official flight, he accidentally flies into a thick cloud bank, crashes into the side of a mountain, and dies a very, very painful, painful death. Like, his plane caught on fire, and then he just slowly burned to death over the course of like 3 hours. And that is the end of our stories. Yeah, of course that's not it. You know, he hasn't even like technically killed anybody yet, so that would be weird. After getting his pilot's license, Robert started to make a habit of coercing Anchorage prostitutes to go out with him to his car or his camper before then driving them out to a secluded area where he would obviously try to rape them. Unfortunately for Robert, many of these women put up more of a fight than he anticipated, and several of them actually ended up escaping. Unfortunately, although like most of them reported these incidents to police, they either could not provide a physical description or the police just refused to believe the ramblings of a prostitute who, like, who, by the way, is incriminating a guy with a lengthy criminal history at this point. But instead, you know, Alaskan police are just like, meh, a guy makes some good donuts. I ain't gonna prosecute that guy. He's the best donut baker in town. Like, we ain't even got a Krispy Kreme yet. So his stuff pretty is right up there. All right, it'll give him run for the money. So we're not gonna put him back in prison if we don't have to, because otherwise we're gonna get our donuts. where were we? So by 1980, Robert had gotten pretty good at kidnapping prostitutes, which, yeah, I would hope so, because he's doing it so often. Each time, he would prevent himself from being super creepy just long enough to, like, convince them to get into his airplane and fly with them to a remote part of the Kinnick River, where he kept a very secluded, creepy rape cabin. And after he was done raping these poor women, just to be super awful, he would just let, like, he would open the door and just be like, all right, run for your life, and let them just run out into the woods, where he would then use the hunting skills that he had cultivated to break all of these Alaskan hunting records. And just, he would go and hunt these women back down with either a knife or a semi-automatic rifle, which is just a level of psychopathic behavior. I like, that's movie level supervillain evil, to just rape a girl, all right, and then just, like, push the door open and be like, all right, go ahead, try to go back to civilization. And then as she runs off, as soon as she disappears into the woods, he just Elmer Fudds himself out there and hunts them back down. Like, that's insane to me. Also, police quickly began to realize that an alarming number of strippers were disappearing from town, and, like, they needed them for something. And in the past, like, police hadn't really cared about that, because a lot of sex workers in Anchorage were coming in and out of the city without much notice. They were often, like, runaways. They didn't really have much family who kind of knew where they were or anything like that. It was kind of a sad situation. But this time, like, it got so ridiculous that they decided to look into it, since no friends or family had been told that the strippers were then moving on to a new city. On June 13th, 1983, Robert approached 19-year-old prostitute Cindy Paulson while she was standing on a street corner waiting to, you know, make some business. The two negotiated a price for a little sucky-sucky, and Cindy hopped into Robert's truck. This is kind of how things went. And once she got inside, she was met with a gun and a pair of handcuffs. But this time, rather than taking her out to his rape cabin in the woods, Robert took Cindy to his house, cuffed her to a pillar in his basement, and then just raped her for several hours. Now, Robert, at this point, was married with two kids, all right? His first wife had left him, obviously, back in Iowa. But once he had gotten back to Anchorage, like, he had gotten married, he'd had this family. So he's doing all of this while he is married with his kids. But in this instance, his family was vacationing in Europe. And during his, you know, after he was done raping, he goes off, takes a little nap, and then he drives Cindy to the airport, where they would then go out to the rape cabin. But when the two arrived at the airport, Robert gets out, proceeds to kind of walk around to go grab Cindy, take her over to the airplane. But at that moment, she pushes her way out of the truck and starts running for her life. And Robert, you know, he's just like, stop, or I'll kill you. And by the time he's done saying this, like, she is long gone. Like, she's so far away. Literally, like, she has made it to this busy street, lots of traffic, and she's jumped in front of a guy named Robert Yount. Robert picks her up, drives her over to the Mush Inn Motel, which, gross, that's a gross sounding name. A lot of mushing in going on over there. I was right there. I'm sorry, I had to do it. Drives her over to this hotel before calling police and letting them know what happened. A short time later, Officer Greg Baker meets with Cindy, who was really more concerned about getting the handcuffs off of her wrist than reporting what had actually happened, which, I don't know, I kind of get that. Yount, however, insisted on taking Cindy to the hospital, And after an examination, Cindy then told police everything that had happened and even provided a description of what Robert looked like. Police, obviously very well aware of Robert and who he is, and like they're like, oh yeah, this is not surprising. Well, okay, we'll go talk to him. So they went over to visit with Robert, who admitted to it. Like, it's like, yeah, I was with her. But he explained that he was just taking Cindy on a romantic getaway before she went all crazy with him. And he provided some really solid alibis backed up by testimony from two of his friends as, a way to try to prove his innocence. He even lets police search his house. And I don't understand at this point, because like the community knows he has a family, but they're just like, oh, you're having an affair with your wife and you're taking this girl out on a romantic getaway out into the wilderness. I get it. We've been there, right? So police like go in, they search the house, and despite matching details from Cindy's story to what police saw in the house, she tells him, I was, all this kind of stuff. So Officer Baker still believed that Cindy was telling the truth, but Cindy was like, she was over it at this point. She tried to get police to just close the case. Police still kind of skeptical. They don't really know who to believe. And here's the thing. In addition to Cindy's case, police had a string of over a dozen murders and assaults on their books from area prostitutes that they had no idea what happened. And even then, even after they received a psychological profile of the killer, which described him as an excellent hunter with low self-esteem, a history of being rejected by women, a stutter, and a completely oblivious wife, which described Robert perfectly. I wasn't even making up those details. That is exactly what the psychological profile said about the killer in all of these cases. And all of that describes Robert Hansen so perfectly. And Alaskan police are just like, man, I don't know anyone in town like that. Who could it be? And 3 months later, Baker finally presented a report against Robert Hansen to Sergeant Glenn Flothy, something like that, of the Alaska State Troopers. And this guy, Sergeant Glenn Flothy, had been assigned to lead the, quote, topless dancer task force that had been put together to try to figure out who was killing all these prostitutes. And thanks to several bodies over the course of the last several weeks that had been found in the Kinnick River Valley, Flothy, this guy, finally recognizes the obvious pattern and issues an order for Robert's arrest. And so Robert, he's arrested on October 27th, 1983. He's placed in an interrogation room adorned with maps of the entire Kinnick River Valley with X's marking all of the places that they had found bodies. And for the next 5 hours, Flothy and Sergeant Daryl Gallion asked Robert, what's going on? Like, why do we have this map here? All right. Why are all these X's here? We know that what's going on. While this is happening, police searched Robert's home again and found various jewelry items that belonged to the missing strippers. Shocking. They also found old ID cards and a Ruger Mini 14 hunting rifle hidden under the floorboards, and that was pretty much all the evidence that they needed. Robert, initially he said that he only wanted the prostitutes to do a little honking on his bobo, and that if they just complied, he would just let them go. And it was only when they resisted that he would then strip them down, rape them, and force them to run through the wilderness, right? Because that's a reasonable response, It's just, I don't know. So he told police that he then gave these women a head start before going out hunting them down like animals, like, we've already covered. And then once he found them, he would capture them, rape them again, and then he would just let them run again. Now, at this point, I gotta question what these strippers and these prostitutes are doing, all right? He's going to hunt you down. Like, do you think you just learned your lesson from the first time? It's like, oh, wait, no, I shouldn't just, like, cry out in the middle of an open spot in the forest and let him find me. I'll try again, but this time I'll just, like, hide behind a tree. And maybe he won't find me at that. I don't know. But after being charged with 4 counts of murder, Robert took a plea deal that allowed him to spend the rest of his life in a federal prison in exchange for helping investigators find all of the bodies. Because Alaska, if they do get you, they're going to be pretty quick to kill you. But Robert takes this plea deal. He leads officers to 17 grave sites and confesses to raping 30 more women. After it was discovered that he had been collecting maps and other materials in a plane to escape prison, he was transferred to a maximum security prison where he died on October 21st, 2014. Now, possibly craziest element of this story out of everything was that Robert's wife waited another 2 years after he was sentenced to prison for the murders to actually divorce them. And she only did it because their kids kept getting teased in school. Like, I just don't get it sometimes. So that's it. The story of Robert Hansen, probably the most famous serial killer in Alaska. I mean, not that there's like a huge long list. There's been a couple, but yeah, it just, you know, how he was able to get away with it for so long because of, again, more police incompetence is what's so frustrating. Also, just how his wife just kind of was just like looking the other way the entire time. I don't know how you don't pick it up. I don't know how you don't pick up on it, but whatever. I don't know. I'm not a woman. I don't know what it's like to be oblivious. Not saying that all women are oblivious. Those were two separate statements. I felt like I needed to clarify that. Anyway, let's see what we learned today.
What did we learn?
I think number one is just, this milkshake that I had, I'm on a sugar buzz right now. This must be like what really, really low grade cocaine feels like because, anyway, I'm going to crash so hard in probably like an hour. It's going to be great. All right. Number two, Robert Hansen, his father was a baker. He wanted to be a baker just like his father. Opens a bakery in Anchorage after getting laughed out of his small Iowa town. Finds a lot of success. So much so that the police couldn't possibly believe that their favorite donut man was out raping and murdering all these strippers and prostitutes. Who knew? But then number three, yeah, just like what made him unique was that he was just a hunter, and he would just let his victims run out into the wilderness, and he would hunt them down like a moose, and he would kill them or rape them again or whatever he, you know, thought was great. And that, I don't know, that really makes him unique and just such a crazy story. Next week on Our Weird World, Serial Killer September continues with the story of Randy Kraft. I've actually mentioned him a couple of times on the show, kind of inadvertently, because I get him confused with a couple of other California serial killers who were operating kind of around the same time. But this time, we're definitely talking about him because his story is really gruesome. Really gross. And so gonna preemptively give you a trigger warning for that. Next, the week after, also super graphic. So, you know, if that's just a thing you can't handle, then see you in October, because it's gonna get even worse as we go through this month. But that's it. Thank you all for listening. Keep telling all your friends and keep it weird. Ba with ta ba, da bang a dang, diggy diggy diggy, said the boogie, said up jump the boogie. A ba with da ba, da bang a dang, diggy diggy diggy, said the boogie, said up jump the boogie. And this is for the questions that don't have any answers. The midnight glancers and the topless dancers, the candid freaks, cars packed with speakers, the G's with the 40s, and the chicks with beepers. The Northern Lights and the Southern Comfort. It don't even matter if the veins are punctured. All the crackheads, the critics, the cynics, and all my heroes in the methadone clinic. All you bastards at the IRS, for the crooked cops and the cluttered desks, for the shots of Jack and the caps of meth, half pints of love and the fifths of stress, for the hookers all tricking out in Hollywood, and for my hoods of the world misunderstood. I said it's all good and it's all fun. Now get in the pit and try to love someone. Ba wit da ba, da bang a dang, diggy diggy diggy, said the boogie, said up jump the boogie.